Someone once asked me, why do people love watching criminals pull a heist? To which my answer was, because the house always wins. If you play long enough, and you never change the stakes, the house takes you. Unless, when that perfect hand comes along, you bet big, and then you take the house. Did I rush that speech? It feels like I rushed it. This is The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. This week, we're going to have a ton of movie and TV news. Jurassic Park turns 25, and then we're going to discuss why everybody loves a heist. All right, let's steal ourselves a show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hoes, Johnny Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing great. And somebody who knows something about stealing, Scott Calgaro.
Wow, really?
You used to be a cop, so
you that know. That just made it worse.
You know thieves. Well, you.
Oh, okay.
Did you steal on the job?
No. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. Welcome back. Jesus. There's been a lot of stuff that's happened since the last time we talked, but before we get into all the stuff we're going to talk about, I do want to say a little later in the show, we're going to have some details about that cruise that we've talked about in previous episodes. So I will tell you when that's coming up. And Mr. Brian Williams, founding home member, he came back on the show to kind of pimp that cruise. So keep an eye out for that. That's actually going to be, I think, a lot of fun. All right, let's get into the movie and TV discussion. A few big movie updates. One just dropped before we started recording, which is Jared Leto's Joker standalone movie is definitely going forward.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be necessary. I'm looking forward to hearing what they do with that.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm not one of these people who hated his Joker. I thought he was kind of a specter in the movie that he was in, and that's fine. We didn't really get a good handle on what he was, and why not? Let's just find out more about him.
You know who hated the Joker character that he did? This person, me. I thought that was not a good characterization at all.
You and the internet. Yes. So.
I actually kept an open mind until I saw that movie. And I'm not one of the people who hate Suicide Squad. I actually kind of enjoyed it. But man, did I hate his character. I did not like it.
I need to know if the grill is part of it. Because if the grill is there, then I have a problem. If the grill's not there, I'm more open to it. I can handle it just a little bit more.
I liked everything they did with it, like the whole idea.
Even the grill? You liked the grill.
I even liked the grill. The grill makes sense to me. One of the things that I loved the most was how he had the different hands tattooed on, the different mouths tattooed on him, so that when he wanted to really like look sinister and laughy, he would just hold the hand up in front of him with the tattoo on it. I thought that was a brilliant idea.
Brilliant. I think that word gets overused.
That was the only part of that character that I actually did like. In that one scene where he puts his hand up in front of his
mouth. It doesn't make you right, jackass.
No, it definitely doesn't make you right, dude, because the rest of that whole thing sucked. That was the 5 seconds of that performance that I liked.
He said, everything you think is wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, some other cool movie news. The remake to The Crow is dead. I think that's cool because we don't need it, and that's one of the things. But some people feel differently because I was kind of looking forward to Jason Momoa doing something cool. Legally Blonde 3 is apparently in the works. Say what you want. I like those movies. I think they're fun. And Top Gun started filming. Tom Cruise back in the cockpit. I'm so excited.
Volleyball. These are all really awesome things. I actually agree with you. Like Legally Blonde 3. Okay, let's see what they do. The Crow. Yeah. It's almost like that movie's cursed or something.
You think?
Almost. Almost. I mean, people say, well, they made sequels and everything else and nothing happened. I'm like, yeah, this is a straight up remake. And I think Brandon Lee himself is plaguing the productions. He's making sure this never happens.
Yeah, it's quite possible. You know what I'm really upset about is the fact that I want to see this stupid Bumblebee movie.
What does it have to do with anything I just talked about?
It's movie news. They just dropped the trailer to that. So right. I'm talking about it.
Okay.
I'm going to go back to what Aaron brought up, and I only really have a strong opinion about one of those movies, and I'll say The Crow remake being dead. Yay.
Other than that, did it make you mad? Like as a human being that they were even going to strive for it?
Yes. There are very few movies that I think should just be left alone. You've remade on Remake This Movie, right? A lot of movies that I thought should have been touched, and I'm like, okay, actually that might work. Leave The Crow alone, man. Leave that as a monument to Bruce Brandon Lee.
Willis, either one.
Yeah, I do not want to see another actor in that role. I think when you remake a movie, it's to do one of two things: make it better or fix a mistake. You can't do The Crow better than the first one. It was perfect the way it is. Leave it alone.
I mean, that's the true definition of method acting.
Wow.
What, sure. Too soon? What is the statute of limitations? All right, so
damn, dude.
Too soon.
Let's go back.
It's always going to be too soon.
Let's go back to Bumblebee then. John, why does Bumblebee get you so excited? Because that trailer actually rocked?
That trailer actually rocked. And it doesn't get me excited. It just makes me mad because I like Bumblebee look like Bumblebee, which I'm okay with him looking like a Camaro in the more recent movies, but I really like the design of him when he's turning into a Volkswagen in this thing. The design of him, it looks cool. He looks chunky. He looks kind of beefy. It looks awesome. They showed Starscream, which actually looks like Starscream from the cartoon, which is ridiculous, but okay, I'll take it. And it just looks like it's going to end up being a fun movie, which makes me mad because I promised myself I'm done with the Transformers.
Just when you think you're out, they pull you back in.
So we're doing a standalone movie about a robot that can't talk. Okay.
Well, Haley Seinfeld's in it, so she can do the talking. It's fine.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. She's a good actress. I'll be honest, man. I was checked out, too. I watched the trailer. Did you watch the trailer, Scott?
Not yet.
It is super fun. It really is. It reminds me of, like, the Amblin movies of the 80s. It feels very family. It's almost like Extraterrestrial lands here and is a reluctant hero, that kind of vibe. I really dug it.
The Transformer movie trailers are always fun.
This looks like a different kind of movie, though. There's no Michael Bayness. There's no underage, inappropriate, half-naked chick leaning on a car that has nothing to do with robots whatsoever. There's none of that.
Sold tickets, though.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying it didn't make money, but this seems like more of a family film. It feels like if you're going to rebuild this product, this is the way to go.
Okay, yeah, based on that, maybe I'll give it a try. I'll watch the trailer after the show tonight and see what I think. But
I actually had to turn off the notifications to the trailer just so that because everyone's commenting on it. And every single time a comment came up after I commented on it, it reminded me how annoyed I was at it. So I had to turn the notifications off.
Something wrong with you.
I haven't even seen the last Transformers movie. I saw the first one with Mark Wahlberg, and then I saw the trailer for the next one with him in it, and I was like, nope, I'm done.
It's like the Game of Thrones version, but not good. And you know what? Nobody's talking about Top Gun 2, and it's really hurting me because I think that sounds just fantastic. I don't even know what the plot is. Don't even care. I just want to see it so bad.
Yeah, I'm with you. I that doesn't feel like it. That saw the first movie got all excited too.
Has it been too long?
No.
That's my only concern about this.
He still looks like the same. So, I mean.
Well, yeah. I mean, Tom Cruise is a vampire, and we know he doesn't
Scientology, man. That's the way to go.
Whatever. It was, what, 86 that the first one came out?
Yeah.
That was a long-ass time ago.
I know. It takes my breath away.
I was, wow.
Jesus.
I'm out. I have nothing to say after that, so just carry on.
We're approaching the danger zone. I'm sorry. I'm writing checks my body can't cash. All right, let's move on.
Are you keeping score, John? We should be writing these down.
Netflix's Ted Sarandos. He said recently, and I quote, "If the entire theatrical run of each Oscar nominee for Best Picture film were pooled and calculated from the beginning to the day the films all ended theatrical play, they played to about 635 million empty seats. What that tells me," this is Ted, is that windows are just way too long. This romantic experience of sitting in a dark room with strangers and watching a movie, you're mostly by yourself by the end of it. Now, he's speaking directly to shortening the window between theatrical and on-demand release dates. Every once in a while, we kind of come back to this. We discuss where moviegoers prefer to watch movies. And while many people say they prefer on-demand, the numbers still just don't justify it. They're not making bank on-demand. They're just not doing it. So it doesn't come close to justifying that concept over a theatrical release, unless you're Netflix, which apparently just prints money. They legally have a printing press in their offices. So what should studios do to appease both customers? Is there a middle ground?
I can tell you what they're going to do, whatever continues to make them money. From my point of view, certain movies only work well in a theater, like the first time. The first time I see an Avengers movie or some big space epic or whatever where the special effects and CGI are a big part of it, guaranteed I'm going to see that in the theater first. I'm always going to want that experience. rom-coms, things that come out that don't rely on the visual presentation of the movie that are more dialogue-driven, I'm fine watching on video. I don't spend a lot of money to go see those in the theater because the experience isn't different. Mm-hmm. The studios are going to do whatever makes them the most money. I agree that sometimes they let these run a little too long, or they let the window draw out between a theatrical release and an on-demand release, but I don't think it's that big a deal.
I don't even think it's that long anymore, really.
It's not. They come out really fast now. And you, like, our cable service has the in-theaters now on demand where you can pay a movie ticket price and watch it right then.
I think I saw Infinity War is going to be out in August or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just came out.
Yeah. I don't think it's as big an issue as what they're making out. As long as they're making money, they're going to keep doing what they're doing.
I really just think this is just their argument as a way to try to get themselves into that Oscars seat. So that if they can make it so that the window's smaller, then maybe they can start dipping their toes into releasing more of their movies out to the theaters so that they can get that Oscar notification or that Oscar kind of feel to it or whatever the stupid rules and guidelines are. I think this is really just a self-serving argument to try to help push that further.
I agree.
So you guys don't think they need to do anything different?
Not really, no.
At this point. Like, this is the best way that you can see movie releases happening.
If this wasn't the best way, if it wasn't making money, they wouldn't be doing it. That's really the only thing I'm going to come down to is businesses will change their model when it stops making them money. This obviously is still working.
Well, they have the theaters to contend with, too, because they have to honor certain contracts with the theaters, and that's why they keep them. You know, they have allotments for that. I think if you got it down to like 60 days, that's perfect. Because then the people that don't want to rush out don't have to, and they're still going to see something relatively new. And the people that do want it, they're paying the premium to get it sooner, to get it in the big venue, and they can, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And hell with MoviePass, and MoviePass is kind of taking over right now, so I don't even really see why any of this is a problem.
I don't think it is. I think this is one guy being a mouthpiece for something that'll benefit him.
Well, yeah. You know, this guy's making... I don't know where the money's coming from. If you look at what they're pumping out versus what they're taking in, the math don't add up.
I stopped trying to do Hollywood math a long time ago, man.
Is he streaming cocaine? That's the only thing I can think that makes sense, like where the extra money's coming from.
Whatever works.
I can't even look at Netflix without finding 6 new shows every single week, I swear.
And they're all good.
I wouldn't say they're all good. I found a couple dumpsters, but mostly.
Not many. Netflix original programming is really high quality for a streaming service, I think.
A lot of their original programming, or quote unquote original programming, is just stuff they bought from other countries that hasn't aired in other places. Mm-hmm. So they can buy things, and so long as, like, let's say they take a show from the United States that hasn't aired in Great Britain, so long they can push it over there, and it's probably something we've seen, like, let's say How to Get Away with Murder, because they don't have it on their TV screens or on a distribution system in England, then they can say it's a Netflix original. That's what the whole thing about Netflix, or how Netflix originals work. In some cases, sometimes they truly have a lot. Well, we know that they have some truly original stuff that they pump out, but in other cases, some of their originals are just stuff that they picked up from other countries and transported back and forth.
I watched my first Netflix original movie about a month and a half ago. It was a movie called Spectral.
Yeah.
Have you seen it or heard of it?
It's got Clayne Crawford, who's
Crawford. It's got... I can't think of
Bruce. Got in more trouble this week.
Bruce Greenwood is in it. It's fairly well-known actors, and the amount of money that they threw at it, the production value was really high. Mm-hmm. And this was something that you could have seen like in a theater, and it wouldn't have struck you as being unusual. For a streaming service original, to me, it was unusual. It was really good.
Yeah. I mean, even for, an HBO original, it looked really – I mean, their stuff looks – They put money on it. Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah.
It's good.
It was good.
It was like – Alien Ghostbusters or whatever.
It was actually a unique idea, and the production value was really high. I thought it was for an original – not for an original, for a movie I would have enjoyed it. For just a theatrical release movie, it would have been good.
This segment brought to you by Spectral. All right.
There you go. There's my plug. You're welcome, Netflix.
Oh, Netflix. You've got all the money. So not streaming cocaine, John. That's what I'm getting. All right.
Yeah, not cocaine.
You know what? They're missing a window. Marijuana. Colorado and California's got a different Netflix package.
Right.
$19.99, you get a little extra. All right. Well, we know you're probably sick of hearing about this, but so we're going to try and work around it. We're going to do it via the way we would do it on our show, as opposed to how many other talking heads are doing this. But we can't go this week without talking about the absolute biggest story in entertainment. We're not going to debate the tweet, because we all agree, bad tweet. But we are going to discuss if canceling Roseanne or any show over a tweet is the right message to send. Let's discuss and have fun with the tap dancing. It's enjoyable.
I'm a little concerned as to whether or not the way we're phrasing is, as to whether or not it's the right message to send, because bottom line, average Joe on the street. I'm going to pull out a story from Minnesota in 2015 to give you a description of, or give you an idea, because I'm of the opinion, if you go out wearing the shirt of the company you work for on your chest, and you do something stupid to an extent that it can embarrass the company and a whole bunch of other stuff, then they have a right to fire you. Mm-hmm. That's they have their absolute right to do that. In Minnesota in 2015, you had a young black girl who's being harassed and bullied by these twin boys. In her father reached out to their fathers to say, hey, this is what's going on. I'd really like it if we can find a way to put a stop to this. And later on in the day, that father calls the girl's father and puts a whole bunch of racially charged voicemails on his voicemail system. So that guy goes in and plays the voicemails on YouTube, and he shows everyone what this guy's doing. That guy loses his job too. So it's not a precedent in any way. I think this is just on such a large scale that it's shocking.
Okay.
If I beat my head against the table, will it screw up your gear? Because
it could, if you hit the gear.
I'm really tired of this subject, and I'm not knocking you for choosing it for the show.
No, I get it. I'm sick of it too.
Yes, she should have been fired, but she should have been fired. There's a lot of people who had nothing to do with her idiocy who are now out of a job. You know, we just had the discussion last time I was on about Clan Crawford being an idiot. Mm-hmm. They fired him. They didn't shit can the entire show. You know, they should have removed her. Now, I get the show is called Roseanne and removing right. her
She's
from
the creator
show.
And yeah.
Right. I get it. But they should have found a way, maybe spin the other actors off into another series. And I think you sent an article showing that they're going
they,
to try
they
to do
are
that.
Reshaping it to see if maybe they can focus on Darlene.
And, good.
Yeah.
And, which I think she's a good way to go.
She is a great way to go. And I think that's good because it doesn't punish all the other people who depend on this show for their livelihood. But should she have been removed? Damn right. Absolutely, she should have.
All right. I'm going to play devil's advocate because, and it's hard to do because anytime you play devil's advocate in this situation, people just start screaming racist. And
I'm ready.
Yeah. No, just throw it at me. Go ahead.
Hold on. Racist.
Yeah.
Racist.
Okay.
I'm closer. It'll be good. It'll be better.
I get why ABC felt they needed to proceed in this way, but even the victim said that this could be a teaching moment, right? She did say that. I feel like the world no longer wants to talk about issues. I feel like instead, if you say or do anything offensive, and I'm saying words. I'm not saying you hurt someone, you physically hurt someone. I'm saying words. You say something offensive, it's shut up and go away. That's our mantra now. Shut up, go away. To me, that doesn't solve anything. All that does is whenever we don't like what someone says, go hide. We don't want to see you ever again. You're ostracized from society. And I get why people have that reaction because they don't want to tolerate it. But in the same token, I feel like to get through something, to grow from something, to actually come to an understanding, you have to be willing to have a conversation about it. And unfortunately, I feel like we're in a position where you can't. Instead, I think it could have been a moment for a very public personality like her to acknowledge her issues, which I might add consists of very public acknowledgement of mental illness that she has. Not that that's excusing that stupid tweet, but and even discuss it on her show. I think those writers are very talented. Not that entire cast didn't need to be fired, like Scott already said. Surely they could craft like a meaningful episode discussing this very subject and actually taking the character and making her have to wear that. Roseanne Conner says something racist and her family calls her on the carpet about it. And then they actually have a meaningful discussion about it. They did that on the show very well, I thought, from the episodes from this resurgence. And I think if people ever really want to come together, shut up and go away does nothing but divide people a little bit further. Because while what she said was awful or what she tweeted was awful, just shut up and go away doesn't do anything to bring it back into the conversation so we can understand, okay, she said this. She apologized. Is that acceptable? No, because I guess she has a history. I don't follow Twitter, so I don't I don't care about her life story, but she has a history of saying things that are very inappropriate. She also has a history of being a comedian. I think there was an opportunity there that the knee-jerk reaction took away. I think there was a great opportunity with the biggest show on television to have a conversation that might have gone further because of the pulpit that Roseanne had, as opposed to now where it's just there's just divided people in different ways. So that's just how I feel about it. Devil's advocate approach.
I'm going to devil's advocate your devil's advocacy.
Okay.
And I'm not going to scream racist at you, I promise.
It's fine. Devil's I'm sure somebody did.
I was primed, but you didn't go there. Mm. So I'm okay with it. I would agree, sort of, with one caveat. If she comes back to do those episodes where they turn this into a teaching moment, she gives up her salary.
Yeah, I would be.
She should not be rewarded for this behavior.
I would agree with that.
As far as...
I guess the way I should have worded it, words, I think you should get the... Everybody deserves a right to make amends. I think there's a way that you can, if she was willing to, I don't know, I have no idea if she'd be willing to. There's a way to make amends and also have a teaching moment with the rest of America, the people that love that show, that are going to listen to her voice. That was an opportunity, I think, that existed that was just squashed because we live in a society that is shut up and go away.
She blamed it on Ambien.
I'm not.
I'm just saying, I don't think she's really in the mood.
I don't think she's there mentally. But she also, if you saw like all the randomness, she was all over the place. That was a woman who was not in her right mind. And I am not excusing that nonsense. I'm just saying that there was an opportunity. I think we're too quick to just run away from a problem as opposed to, or not deal with a problem, as opposed to coming together as a society and dealing with it. We're at a point in culture where everybody just yells. That's all anybody ever does anymore. And if somebody says something they don't like, they yell at them until they go away. And I don't think that's the right solution, personally.
No, I don't think it is the right solution. I think that the way I'm reading this whole case as far as what's happened is that this was a teaching moment, because right now in this country, we do have an issue where race tensions have grown to a boiling point. They really have. There's a lot going on. I'm trying to tap dance around it so I don't bring up anything that we don't need to talk about. But it really is like a boiling point in race tensions. And this is one of those moments where some people were able to teach that no matter who you are, talking like this is inexcusable. So that to me is where the teaching moment is where they decided to teach people what happened. Whether or not you agree with it, I don't know, but this is how they decided to show you that it doesn't matter how big you are. If you do something like this, you can fall.
No, I totally agree with that. I wasn't saying this, they did the wrong thing. I'm just saying, I think there was an opportunity that was squandered because of our knee jerk reaction culture.
I've got one more thing I'll add.
Okay.
And I think this is one of those things.
Is this where you call me a racist?
No, this is where you and I are just going to agree to disagree.
Okay. Well, then why do I care?
How many times do we have to have this conversation? The civil rights movement was 50 years ago, and we're still talking about this like, oh, we need to explain to you why this is a problem.
I will disagree with you. People don't talk about it. They just yell about it.
We've been talking about it for 50 years or more.
Yes, in the past. Currently, no one is talking about anything. Anything.
Everybody, I agree with.
Everybody is just shut up, go away. We don't want to hear you anymore, go away. If somebody says something even reasonable, people are like, shut up and go away. They drown them out. People do that. Star Wars. They're doing that with Star Wars now.
Yeah.
Shut up and go away. Just, my God, drop it and have a conversation. Have a very uncomfortable conversation about an uncomfortable subject in a manner that's respectful to everybody. That's what I'm saying.
I won't argue that too terribly much. And I won't tell you to shut up and go away either. I see where you're coming from. I do. And that argument does have merit. I just think that we've reached a point in history where it's not a conversation we should have to have.
I understand that.
That's all I'm saying.
I do. All right. Let's get back on the happier news, because I know everybody doesn't want to spend so much time. Oh, wait. This isn't happy. It's Walking Dead.
No, I'm out of here.
The Walking Dead gained a new showrunner. Which is good. I mean, Scott Gimple is still involved, but you know, he's handing the reins down. But they're losing Lauren Cohen and star Andrew Lincoln in season 9, because apparently he's going to move on to do other things. I'm sure he'll be fine, his character. Well, and somebody's going to call that a spoiler, even though it's all over the internet. Norman Reedus apparently is getting a sweet deal in the neighborhood of $20 million to stay on. And I know we've talked about how the show has struggled the last couple of years. It's kind of creatively lost its stride. I know John doesn't even watch it anymore, but I know, Scott, you and I do.
Oh, yeah.
Should they even bother, or could this actually revitalize the show in some way?
Yes, they should bother.
Okay,
why? I'll tell you why. Rick Grimes is so stupid, I don't know how he breathes without help.
You know, okay. Why don't you just sugarcoat it a little bit more?
Okay. Was that a little harsh?
Yeah. That was a little harsh.
He needs to go down a little smoother, man.
All right, let's try this. This will be a little bit smoother. If this were real, his entire group would have been zombie food by the end of the fourth episode. How's that?
I mean, that's harsh. You know, I mean, he's trying.
I don't know what you – I don't think you have an understanding of how sugar actually works.
Maybe not.
He's got great hair.
Yeah, he does. I'll give you that. Yeah. I think that putting Daryl in charge of the group is going to take the show in a new direction. And I think it's a direction that I want to check out and see where it goes. Do I have high hopes? No, because they've thrashed this show for the last couple seasons. But I have a little bit of hope that putting Norman Reedus in charge, Daryl, will get back to what I loved about the beginning of this show and get away from watching Rick be an idiot on TV for an entire season.
What if you could break it down to a sentence or two? What did you love the first seasons that you don't think is there anymore?
It was everything that I love about zombie apocalypse movies. It was this group trying to stay alive in this world that's gone completely insane. Mm-hmm. It's one of my absolute favorite genres of film. And I was so excited to see a TV show that got it right. And they got it right for like three seasons. And then it started a slow decline that wasn't bad. And then, you know, it kind of picked up a little bit when Negan got introduced because he was just so batshit crazy. He was fun to watch. And then it just dove off a cliff. I'm hoping that this is them climbing back up the cliff to reset everything back to where it was and then maybe move on with the whole world being the story as opposed to two guys who are pissed off at each other.
All right.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I could say that as somebody who stopped watching two seasons ago, I think it was two seasons ago, right?
It was after the Negan incident.
Yeah. So as somebody who hasn't watched in two seasons, I can say that this actually kind of piques my interest. And if it wasn't such a serialized show, I would probably pick it back up again and just move on. But it is a serialized show. I'd have to go back and watch two seasons worth of show to keep up with it. So it piques my interest a little bit because it would be nice to see what kind of differences the show makes. But the weird thing is that I love Lauren Corhan's character. I like Rick. I'm sorry. I know you guys, and I know he can be a douche canoe half the time, but
worst
I like Rick.
Worst father ever.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. He's a douche canoe, but I kind of like him, and I really want – I always want to see him win. I'm like, you're going to make the right decision this time, Rick. Nope, you proved me wrong.
I liked him
at the beginning. No, this is it right here. This is the moment. Nope, I'm wrong again.
Yep.
I liked him at the beginning when he was making good choices, and then he like broke during the whole prison thing, and when he broke mentally, he never came back. It's like they really screwed up the writing on that character after they left the prison.
Yeah.
And that was when Judith showed up, which, you know, turned that kid into a frag baby. I'm perfectly fine with that.
Hey, yeah, we're simpatico on that one. Take that kid, pull the pin right in the middle of a zombie lure.
Absolutely. That's what I would have used that kid for. And I'm surprised Rick hasn't because he's literally the worst father on the planet. I'm interested again. I wasn't interested. And John, don't worry about watching the last two seasons. Watch the last episode of the last season. You'll be good.
Yeah, you actually will.
Seriously, you don't need to see anything that happened in the 2 years before that. Just watch how last season ended and you're caught up.
It's absolutely true. It sounds like it wouldn't make a sense. It totally makes sense. Yep. They've really gone about 8 steps in 2 years.
He's right.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
See, I can't believe that they're going to do anything better after hearing that. I why would I want to do that to myself?
But they are, because the last two seasons was watching Rick and Negan beat their heads against a wall. For 2 years, now they're going to be gone. So, yay. Let's see what goes.
Well, one of them might be gone.
Well, yeah.
We don't know. Rick, he could go and hang out with Morgan somewhere.
Whatever.
I got a feeling they're not going to kill him off because they want to. I don't know. I just got a feeling that they're not going to.
I don't think so either. I think he's just going to disappear into the woods so that way they can bring him back if they have to.
Yeah. There you go. We need you for the finale here. Yeah, one of those deals. Yeah. Maggie, she's dead. All right. So. They're still mad that she went to another show. They're like, yeah, you're probably not going to make it. Sorry.
Right.
All right. Significant anniversary. Every once in a while when we get a big anniversary, we like to talk about the movie and the significance that it presents. Jurassic Park, and I know the sequel is coming out in a couple weeks, Jurassic World 2, Fallen Kingdom. But Jurassic Park turns 25 years old on June 11th. 25 years old. 1993. It was a different time. Let's discuss its impact. Memories of seeing it the first time, why it stuck with you, if it has, impact the industry, anything. John, what about Jurassic Park? Does it mean anything special to you? You're an artist.
Oh, yeah. Actually, in 1993, I was well into my high school career as an artist. And this is one of those things that really just got me excited for what is to come in the world of art, because this was kind of a roadmap on where I wanted to head in at one point in time in my life. And when I saw the movie, it was like looking at into magic. Dinosaurs were alive and moving amongst us and before my very eyes. I think I wore out the VHS a couple times, and it just became something I just loved and spent time with whenever I could. The thing that drove me nuts about this movie was you go to a school rally and the bands are go to a football game, go to a graduation ceremony. Anytime the band was around, they're playing that stupid freaking song, and it really just made me crazy. But
that song is amazing. I get eyes of wonder whenever it comes on. I get excited. Oh. I'm like, if you hear that song, if you're driving and that song comes up, I'm like, what am I missing? There's something here that I need to find somewhere. What is it? Something in the tree?
Where is it? That music gets me every time.
1993, 1994, I was ready to blow my brains out every time I heard the damn song.
How about initial memories, Scotch?
You know what this means to me?
No, that's why I asked.
I'm old. That's what this means to me. This movie came out the year I gained the ability to drink legally. I was 21 when this came out. It was the most magical movie experience of my life.
Were you drunk when you saw it?
No, surprisingly, I wasn't.
It's really disappointing.
I turned into a little kid again. It's one of the few movies I can think of where I sat in a theater and was just 8 years old and loving dinosaurs again. Mm-hmm. It was magical. And to this day, like I just said, when I hear that song, I get goosebumps because I remember how I felt the first time I saw that movie. It means a lot to me. That's one of my favorite movies ever.
It's a wonderful film, and I felt the same way. I felt like a little kid playing with plastic dinosaurs, you know, just looking at it. And there's a scene in the movie where I think it's Grant and Ian and, you know, they're all in the Jeep and they come over a horizon. And you see – that's the first wide shot you get of the park. And that, to me, their eyes of wondering how they stand up in the Jeep and they're just like – just blindsided and fascinated and just in awe. That's how I felt the entire movie. I mean, I was just – I'm pins and needles through the chase scenes. The tension was fantastic. The wonder and awe was amazing. It really felt like that was the first time in a very, very long time, and I don't know if I've actually felt that way since, that special effects felt special. Yep. You know, where it didn't just feel like, hey, that's cool that they can do that. Wow, I can't believe they made that almost look real, or that looks really pretty cool. That felt like, holy – there's dinosaurs. Like, they made real dinosaurs. Where did they get dinosaurs at? Is there a shop you can buy one? I want a dinosaur in my backyard, like a pet dino. I want that. That's the feeling that I had when I first saw it.
You weren't the only one. Remember, there's that story where people got mad at Spielberg for killing dinosaurs on.
Yes. Oh, people are. Well, we already talked about what people are sometimes.
There's only been one other movie that really made me feel like you did, where the special effects just made my jaw drop and made me feel like a little kid again, and that was 3D IMAX of Avatar. That was like the next jump up for me.
Was that the one with Kevin Costner? You see what I did there?
Yeah, I did. Pocahontas in space, yes. Dances with Wolves in space, Blue Pocahontas, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. The special effects in that were mind-blowing.
They were. Yeah, they were pretty cool.
But even that didn't compare to Jurassic Park for me. That was the most amazing visual experience of a movie I've ever had.
Yeah, well, as far as the visual experience of this movie is often equated as the introduction of sound in 1927. So I think that's pretty amazing kind of foothold it has in history.
Say that again.
Equated to that. So many film historians, cinema freaks, all that other stuff, they equate the use of the graphics in Jurassic Park to being as impactful as the introduction of sound in 1927.
Oh, I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah, so can I. It was incredible.
Can you think of any other movies since then where the special effects are so – they're not special effects to you, where they actually just feel like something tangible?
Well, I just said mine.
John. Oh, yeah, Avatar, you did. Yeah.
John, do you have one?
Do you have anything?
I think that if I were to equate to anything else, it would be the use of mocap for Lord of the Rings.
Okay. Or Planet of the Apes. I wouldn't say
Planet of the Apes is
Caesar
a good one.
Comes close.
Yeah. when we went to see...
John's like, no, not really.
When you yeah. and Scott and I went to see the second Planet of the Apes movie, and the special effects in that were even better than the first Planet of the Apes movie, the first
yeah.
ones.
Yeah.
They looked real, especially the orangutan, Maurice. Mm-hmm. You could not tell that that was not a real freaking orangutan. It was amazing. And that's like next level special effect stuff.
I mean, they were just reusing the stuff from Lord of the Rings.
It doesn't mean okay, it doesn't John. Count, man.
Well, I'm just saying you asked for something that's as impactful. I said it was Lord of the Rings because you guys are using Planet of the Apes. Lord of the Rings is the one who came up with the technology that Lord of the that stupid monkey movie was using.
Planet of the Apes.
That's the one.
Are you specifically talking about Gollum? The motion capture for Gollum?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, same actor, and everything.
Yeah, it was the same actor and it was the same technology. I think the apes, they just like upped it a little bit. I think Gollum still looked a little CGI to me. Not a lot, but a little. The apes looked freaking like they were in a zoo. Like
I think so, Gollum doesn't hold up going backward to me as much, but the Caesar does. And I think Jurassic Park still, 25 years later, still holds up to me. Yes, I really don't have any flaws with that movie, especially if you see it like upgraded Blu-ray, 4K, whatever you've seen it in. It still holds up and looks great. So that's definitely a pioneer. Anything else in Jurassic Park that it really holds in your heart or you've noticed from other movies? I mean, I know it really launched the craze of big giant. It brought big monsters back. I mean, Godzilla was kind of gone, right? And then big monster movies started making a comeback because Jurassic Park started firing on all cylinders.
Well, Toho Godzilla was still around. There were still new Toho Godzilla movies being made, and then this helped bring the American Kaka Godzilla to life.
This would be the Matthew Broderick version?
Yes, that's the Kaka Godzilla.
Gotcha. We lost him in the helicopter in the buildings.
Right.
Yeah. I'll never get over it. I'll never get over it.
I wanted to love that movie so much, and I can't.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, we needed to have Godzilla Raptors. We needed to have those because Jurassic Park had Velociraptors, and Godzilla Raptors are just as scary, if only they're the exact same thing.
I do have one question about Jurassic Park, though, or actually the Jurassic Park films. Why does the T-Rex always have to save the people at the end? I mean, it feels like that's happened at least 3 or 4 times.
I don't know, but they're wearing it out. They need to stop doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, the T-Rex is a better anti-hero than Boba Fett.
Somebody just hates Boba Fett.
It worked as a great surprise at the end of the first one, but now you're starting to expect it. And they really need to stop, figure out a different way to use the T-Rex, like make it freaking evil again.
Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you.
I mean, I've never seen a T-Rex get accidentally knocked into a pit.
Did you guys like Lost World?
The two sequels that came after Jurassic Park, they were okay. They were just trying to mac on the original, though. I really
dug The Lost World until they went to the city, and then it got too cheesy for me.
See, that was actually when I started to like that one.
That's where we agree to disagree, I when guess.
When it ate the dog?
Yeah.
I barely remember The Lost World, but I do like the Jeff Goldblum one. That one I can watch over and over again.
That's The Lost World.
That is The Lost World.
Is it The Lost? Did they go to the city in that one?
Yes.
Did you watch it? Are you sure you like that one?
I think I've seen it a lot of times. Maybe I just go to sleep at that point. I don't know.
The third one was the one where they brought
Sam Neill back.
Right.
Oh, that's the one I really like. Never mind. I take that back.
That's not bad. I actually haven't seen a bad Jurassic Park movie. I've liked them all.
I like that one more than the second one. I thought that was a great storyline.
I love Jeff Goldblum, and I love the scene where he's in the creek and everybody's like, oh, that's amazing. And he's just like, oh, yeah, first there's ooh and ah, and then there's screaming. And then they have that set piece where they're in the trailer as it's going off the cliff. And that's one of the most, that's an intense ass scene. I love that scene.
Yeah, that scene did work.
But yeah, I guess the third one had, pterodactyls. So that was probably pretty cool. That's why you like it.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is why I like it.
What about Jurassic World?
Jurassic World I thought was really good. I thought that they did a great job of bringing Jurassic Park back to life. Like, this is what would have happened if it would have worked.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to show you why it didn't work again. I thought that as I thought that would be boring and kind of trite, like we're going to see, oh, we're just going to see the same plot all over again. I actually really liked it. I thought it was the best of the series after the first one.
I really enjoyed just watching Chris Pratt walk around with all that damn Chris Pratt swagger. So it wasn't like the goofy kind of character he normally is. That like it wasn't. It's nice to see that there's a difference between Star-Lord and the character he plays in Jurassic Park. It's nice to see that there's actually a difference there. He has more of a roguish swagger to him here. And the thing that makes me crazy about it is just watching Bryce Dallas Howard run around in heels the way she did. She would have snapped an ankle like 2 minutes into the movie.
I gave her credit for trying.
Yeah.
I give her credit for trying. It just infuriated me every single time because I'm like, come on, this chick can't get like a pair of sneakers.
They're busy. They're being chased like all the time.
A pair of flip-flops right off the concession stand.
She'd have been better off going barefoot at some point.
No kidding. I mean, I've heard there's some benefits to barefoot running.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. All right.
I agree with you about Chris Pratt. I thought they gave him the best lines and he delivered them perfectly, but not in a Star-Lord kind of way. I thought he was great.
I think that movie gets a lot of hate because the story's dumb. I don't think any of the Jurassic Park movies have a fantastic story. I don't think you need a fantastic story. It's about dinosaurs. And it delivered. You know, it was a fun romp.
Yeah.
A thrill.
They're dinosaurs. Wow enough.
Exactly. Here's a story. We don't need anything really overly detailed. We don't need DNA structuring and anything. Blah, 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 blah. All right. Well, before we move on, we wanted to take a second and say thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And if you're wondering what Patreon is, it's support for your favorite podcast. Plus, you get bonus content based on the tier you pick. If you want to sample our Patreon right now, our solo spoiler cast is available to everybody exclusively on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And if you sign up, you get instant access to numerous bonus episodes, including the just released Bad Movie Night for Face Off. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And that's a lot of fun. Face Off is a lot of fun. Both the movie and the Bad Movie Night.
The Bad Movie Night was pretty good. The movie is, yeah, it's a bad movie. In the bad is so good kind of way.
Yeah.
That movie's awesome.
I hate it when you leave, but I love to watch you walk away.
I'm so mad I can't say that anymore.
No, you can't. You can't. That movie could never happen today.
Nope.
Never. All right, let's go to some upcoming releases, John. What's coming up?
All right, so coming up first, we have Ocean's 8. Debbie Ocean gathers an all-female crew to attempt the impossible heist at a New York City yearly Met Gala. This is directed by Gary Ross, starring Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway, Helena Bonham Carter. Why does she need so many names? I don't know. And a whole lot more. Following that up, we have Heredity. When the matriarch of the Graham family passes away, her daughter's family begins to unravel cryptic and increasingly terrifying secrets about their ancestry. This is directed by Ari Aster, starring Toni Collette, Gabriel Byrne, and Alex Wolff. The trailer to this makes me say that this movie is Nope the movie.
Fair.
Followed by Hotel Artemis. Set in a riot-torn near-future Los Angeles, like tomorrow probably, Hotel Artemis follows the nurse who runs a secret members-only emergency room for criminals. So it's kind of like John Wick Society, but for criminals who need help, I guess. Mm-hmm. This is directed by Drew Pierce, stars Sophia Boutella, Dave Bautista, Jodie Foster, Jeff Goldblum makes an appearance, and Sterling K. Brown to round it off. Following up that, on Netflix, we have the release of the finale for Sense8. The Wachowskis come back for the final installment for their wonderful little series. Do take time to catch that, which is also followed by Netflix's release of The Staircase. It's a true crime documentary film by Jean-Javier de Lestrade, and it's the step-by-step courtroom proceedings, the investigation, everything that has to do behind the death of Michael Peterson's wife and the crime that was committed. I've seen this on Sundance Channel. This is from, again, 2004. They're also going to release supplemental episodes besides what they did in 2004, as well as new stuff, new revelations, and new possibilities to the case, only to Netflix. So it's really interesting. I've seen this already, and if you like true crime stuff, I suggest you take a chance on this, because yeah, it's a deep dive. You're going to see some stuff and then you're going to hear some words you never thought you'd hear in a courtroom.
Wow.
So all these things being said, Scott, what are you going to check out this weekend?
A couple of those have really piqued my interest. Ocean's 8 looks great. I mean, that just looks like an interesting take on the Ocean's movies that we love.
Mm-hmm.
Hotel Artemis, I just saw my first trailer for when I saw Deadpool the other day with the family. And that was my first thought. John brought it up, was like, wow, it's like the hotel from John Wick, only as a hospital. And I thought that was – I like that idea in John Wick, and I think it's going to do great as a movie. So out of that list, and then maybe Hereditary, I think those three are probably the ones on that list that I want to see the most.
Hereditary, number one.
Hereditary, yeah.
That's number one for me. Number one. That's what I want. I mean, Ocean's 8, number two. It's really close. But I've heard nothing but great things about Hereditary since it premiered at Sundance. I've got a couple friends that saw it. It was at South By, and I couldn't get there. I've heard nothing but great things that this movie's the real deal as far as a horror movie is concerned. I love a great horror movie, so I am fully invested. I am not, other than what John just said, I'm not looking at any trailers. I'm not reading up on it. I don't want to know anything else about it. I just want to walk in and hopefully get the crap scared out of me.
Agreed.
Yeah. What I say that the trailer makes it feel like Nope, the movie to me, is because even the bits of the trailer that I saw made me feel uncomfortable, and I'm really interested in seeing this. I don't know, but this whole weekend seems interesting because there's not any one thing that I would – I think the only thing I would actually pass up on is the majority of The Staircase, because I've already seen the whole – I've seen most of it. Mm-hmm. So I would only be catching up on the three new episodes that they just premiered at Sundance. Gotcha. The rest of it – I know Sense8, I'm going to make time for Hotel Artemis. I'm going to do what I can to get there. Ocean's 8. I think the only reason why I might miss that is because I'm pretty sure my wife's going to make plans without me and go see it with a bunch of girls. And then they're probably going to knock over a bank or something.
Ooh, you might get rich by next weekend.
Right.
Then you can throw all the money from this podcast away and just go live on a beach somewhere.
That'd be the life. Wait, money?
Yeah. Money's great. Money's fun.
Shh, that was a secret.
Well, speaking of throwing life away and living on a beach, we have a nice little pitch from Mr. Brian Williams about that crew that we've been talking about for the last few episodes. So here we go. Okay, we're taking a break from our regularly scheduled podcast right before we get to our exciting topic. We wanted to bring on a little special something-something named Brian Williams, founding home member and now founder and owner of Wanderstruck Travel. What's up, Brian?
Hey, bud. Glad to be back.
Yeah, and you're not here to talk about movies or anything. You're here to pimp your wares, correct?
That's pretty much it. You know what? I figure everybody else has been doing it for the last like 8 years. Why not get on my game?
Right. Brian's here to talk about something really cool that he put together with his new travel agency, Wanderstruck Travel. And he is legit. So it's a legit travel agency. All right. He's not on a street corner.
That's right. It's no multi-level marketing pyramid scheme type stuff. This is
real.
This is the real deal, yeah.
And what he's trying to do is offer something cool that listeners can partake in, get kind of a discount rate, and also hang out with a bunch of people, because a lot of the Hollywood Outsider is going to be at this event, which is, tell them what are we going to do here? What can you do for people? What are we all going to do as a collective Hollywood Outsider listening community, as well as anybody else that wants to come, friends, family, whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, this is open to, you know, our listeners, but also their extended friends and family too, if you've got a handful of people you want to bring with you. So the more the merrier. It's called Movies on the Caribbean Express, and it's going to go down from June 16th through the 23rd of 2019. So we will be going on the Royal Caribbean's Harmony of the Seas, and it is one of the largest cruise ships in the world. It's just fantastic. They've got like actually seven neighborhoods, what they call neighborhoods, that all have a different vibe or a feel. And this thing is absolutely amazing. It you almost don't even want to leave the ship.
And he's actually, you set up a Facebook group for anybody that wants to go ahead, and you can join in there if you want, just to check it out. He's got pictures of the cruise ship, which I've never been on a cruise. I will be on this one. I've never been on one, but seeing pictures of it, it's like a small little world in there. It's a city, several cities apparently.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I started that Facebook group, and it's technically a closed group. You will just have to apply. It's just kind of to filter out some of the ISIS people or whatever that the Russians that want to hone in on our gig or what have you. So
the hackers.
That's right. That's right. This is utterly amazing. And like I said, we'll be posting pictures, videos, cruise tips, things to help you get prepared for this trip, because there's a lot of little things that can make your cruising experience a lot more pleasurable.
All right, so you know what? People want to know details about the cruise, so let's get into the basics. You already said the dates are June 16th through the 23rd of 2019, so 1 year from now, correct?
That's right. That's right.
And you do want to get there the Saturday before, so the price is actually going to include, correct me if I'm wrong, a hotel stay with transportation to and from the actual cruise.
That's right. So all the prices that are quoted will include not only the cruise, which entails all that delicious eating, all the entertainment, all the dancing. It not only encompasses that, but also is the cost of your hotel room the night before, and also your transfers from the hotel to the ship, and then from the ship, once the cruise is over, from the ship back to wherever you parked or the airport, whichever way that you came in.
And that's through Orlando, right?
Right. There are a couple of other smaller options, but basically I'm assuming most people will probably fly into Orlando.
Okay. We've got the dates. We've got the basics of what the price will cover. And that includes food. Now, if you want to drink extra, if you want to drink, that you can either pay for it on the ship or you can get a drink package. That's separate. Talk to Brian about that once we get this all wrapped up. But what are the ports? So I know you get 5 ports because it's 7 nights, Sunday to Sunday. What are the 5 ports we stop at?
You're looking at the first one, the first stop. Once you leave, the next day you end up in Coco Cay, Bahamas. Now, that is Royal Caribbean's private island. They have all sorts of just cool things to do there. And actually, they're in the middle or getting ready to start a $200 million renovation of this island where they'll have everything from a 135-foot vertical water slide to a balloon that carries you up 450 feet. I mean, this thing is going to be sick. So you leave there. You have what they call a sail day, which is basically where you're just at sea the whole time. That's a fantastic time to maybe check out some of the flow riders, which is these surf machines, or maybe spend some time at the spa or just lay around the pool, whatever you want to do. Then go to Cozumel, Mexico. A lot of people have heard about. It's a very popular attraction there. And then we'd kind of bounce down to Roatan, Honduras after that, then come back to the next day after that, come back to Puerto Costa Maya.
Close enough. I've heard it both ways.
Yeah. My apologies for butchering that name. And then we have another sail day before we get back to Port Canaveral, where we departed from.
That's awesome. That's going to be fun. And there are going to be both of the sail days, I believe there are movies that you can watch under the stars with, and we'll be partaking in that as a part of the Hollywood Outsider, and hopefully listeners will want to check that out too.
Yeah, absolutely. We're working with Royal Caribbean to coordinate a movie under the stars event for us, if not more than one. And also a couple of other special, unique experiences that are really just for us. There's a number of ideas being kicked around, and there's some kind of fleshing out of the details and what we want and what we can, you know, what we can get. So this is that'll still be in the works in the next couple of months or so. But as soon as we have definitive information, we'll definitely keep you posted on that. But it's going to be amazing. It's going to be absolutely amazing. And I can't believe how far Royal Caribbean has gone to help out with getting this stuff helped, you know, set up.
I'm excited. I've never been on a cruise. So I'm really pumped for this. So I can't wait. And it's cool that hopefully some of you guys listening will be able to partake. Bring your families if you want. Don't mistake that you have to hang out with us the whole time. It's your cruise. We're just going to be on the same boat. And we're going to try to do a couple things where everybody can come if they want. If you'd rather just take advantage of the discount and just have your own fun, that's your prerogative, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You can interact or not interact as much as you want with us. And that's what's great about this ship is this thing is huge. You could probably go the full week and not really see any of us. Just depends on what you like to do. You know, just eventually you just cross paths or what have you. But there's so many things to do. The shopping, the eating, the drinking, the dancing, the slide. It's got a 100-foot slide that you can slide down.
On the boat. So weird.
That's just the dry slide. They also have 3 water slides, which they call the perfect storm. There's a zip line. There's a carousel. It's just mind blowing.
Do they have a water slide that actually goes into the ocean and we can just dump Scotty into the ocean for fun?
No, but I hear if you pay some of the staff enough, they might be able to make somebody disappear.
That's a joke.
That's a joke.
That's a joke. That's not part of the package unless you pay Brian extra. All right. So poor Scott. He's like, I don't want to go now. For this trip, Brian will be on there. We'll be part of this. I'll be there. Scott will be there. John is trying to make it happen. He does have plans with his wife next year, so he's trying to make it work. So hopefully the entire Hollywood Outsider crew will be there, as well as some of our family and friends, and hopefully yours too. Again, you do not have to hang out with us. It's just a great price for people that listen and anybody else that wants to partake. So I think everybody would really, really enjoy. I think it's going to be a blast to do this. It sounds exciting. Where do prices start?
Well, this is one of the best parts here. Prices are actually starting at $9.97. And again, that's a hotel the night before you embark for the cruise. And then also the transportation to the cruise and then away from the cruise once the cruise is over. Don't really know how you can get a better deal than that.
I don't either. And I will tell you this. I've traveled with Brian a couple times, and whenever Brian travels with you, something cool always happens. No matter where he goes, if you listen to our past episodes back when he did this regularly, every time he goes somewhere, something crazy and fun happens. So I recommend it just for that. It's worth it.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you because you're absolutely right.
Sometimes you just end up being part of a movie studio. You just never know what's going to happen. You just don't know.
Just never know.
All right, so that's the gist of it. I know we've been kind of waiting to get the details to everybody, but now the details are there. Availability is limited. I mean, we do have a block, but availability is limited. And the quicker you reserve your room, the quicker you are locked in for the cruise, you know, so you don't want to be left out. So if people want to reserve a seat, they want to do it like right now, Brian, what do they do? Where do they go?
Really, though, you can go to wonderstrucktravel.com. If you want to just get in touch with me, just go to the Facebook group for this cruise. And again, that's Movies on the Caribbean Express. So just you can get in touch with me there. We'll go through all the details. Let's see here. If you don't have, you want to reserve a spot, but you don't quite have the money to pay for everything right now, $100 will reserve your spot. It won't book you because the full deposit is actually $375 per person. But the $100 will save your spot, will save your room until you get the full deposit. And then once we get the full deposit, we can actually put your name on the room and get you assigned a room and everything.
All right. It's Movies on the Caribbean Express. Again, want to get back to the regular show, but thank you so much, Brian, for putting this all together. I'm really pumped. I know Scott's really excited. John, for as much as John can be, is excited. I mean, he never really makes a difference in tone no matter what happens. So we just assume.
Yeah, I'm just going under the assumption that he's excited also. And I mean, I'm really pumped. And there's a lot of hard work's gone in, a lot of hours. And to kind of see this gelling and starting to take shape is just making me more pumped up for this thing. And I haven't been this excited about something in a very long time. And so I'm really looking forward to spending time with you guys and y'all's families and more than just a, you know, the casual dinner here or there type of thing. And also, you know, spending some time with some of these listeners that we've grown to become friends with over the years. And man, this is just going to be a blast. Get in here.
Yeah, definitely. Sign up. Go to Movies on the Caribbean Express or go to wanderstrucktravel.com, right? One word, wanderstrucktravel.com?
Yep.
All right, everybody, check it out. And there will be a link in the show notes. If you don't have a pen handy in the show notes, there will be a link. So you can find it. Be sure to sign up. Okay, I will be there. Brian will be there. We're hopefully going to have a podcast thing going on at the time. We'll see what happens. But thanks, everybody, for partaking. I hope you enjoy what Brian has put together. Thanks again, Brian, for being here and doing a little plug.
Yeah, it's always good to, you know, stop in now and then.
Now everybody send him an email at brian@thehollywoodoutsider.com and try to guilt him to coming back for more than one episode. All right. Everybody take care. We're getting back to the episode. We're getting back to the topic right now. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Who doesn't love a heist? Who doesn't love a heist? Everybody loves one.
Cops.
All right, cops. Except dirty cops. They probably like them. All right, well, a couple of years ago on episode 225, we all pitched in and crafted our perfect heist team. But we thought we would kind of revisit the topic and talk a bit more in detail about heists and entertainment in general. So let's just get into it. Now, heist, for people that don't know, means you're robbing somebody. You get a bunch of friends or guys you don't know, or, you know, you get a crew, you put some schematics on the table, and you figure out what's what, and you get in there and you get that stuff. That's really all a heist is. Let's get into it. It doesn't have to be a heist movie, though. Heist can take place inside other movies. So What is it about planning a heist and stealing from other people, sometimes innocent, sad, lonely people, that is just so damn fun?
Because we all would love to do it. None of us have the guts or the brains or the team that can help us do it.
Is guts the way we want to say that? Because it's kind of say, hey, criminals are gutsy. As opposed
they
to,
are.
Well, they're breaking the law. That's not gutsy. That's bad.
I know. Well, yes. They're also risking the consequences.
Unless you listen to this podcast, that. We're okay with you.
I would love to, and I know I was a cop for 17 years. I would love to be a part of like an Ocean's 11 type team that could pull off something that big. Like there's stealing from your local gas station, and then there's robbing a bank, and then like orders of magnitude above that is what Danny Ocean and his team did to the casinos in Vegas. Mm-hmm. That would be awesome. You got to admit that would be awesome. Even if you're a law-abiding citizen like me who has never had any thought of actually breaking the law, I would love to be a part of something like that. We all would. It just looks great.
I was 8 and stole a penny racer from a – you probably don't remember what those are, but they were like little plastic cars. You put a penny in the back of them and I stole one from a store, whatever the hell it was, convenience store of some kind. And I felt like a master criminal. And to this day, it's a proud accomplishment because I'm like, I didn't even get caught. I had that penny race. Nobody even knew. Now, would I ever do that again? No, absolutely not, because it was wrong. But I get there's a thrill about taking something that's not yours and getting away with it. I think people they realize they don't want to do it because nobody wants their stuff stolen, right? So why would you want to steal someone else? That's not cool. It's really bad form. But to live through the entertainment vessel, you can pretend to do things that you would not do, just like being a freaking Jedi.
So I'm going to tell a story real quick.
Oh, boy.
When I was in middle school, I had a group of friends, and they were like the first friends that I made in this specific middle school because I had just moved into the town. And one of their favorite things to do was to go to the local 7-Elevens and steal baseball cards. Hmm. And I really didn't care. And because I didn't like, it's not like I watched baseball or anything, but I wanted to do something with this new group of friends. But I really had problems wrapping my head around the idea of stealing baseball cards. So what I ended up always doing was I got it to the point where I got them to send me in to go steal the baseball cards. And what I would do is actually just go in and buy them.
That sounds right.
That's and awesome. I would come out and I would tell this whole story about how like, oh, I just bought a drink but I stole all these baseball cards and like have like my pockets filled with them. So like I really couldn't get my head around the idea of stealing things myself because I don't think it's right. I don't think it's anything I need to be a part of. I really can't deal with the consequences. As soon as I start feeling guilty, it wrecks me. I really can't do that. However, I do like a good heist movie only because of the fact that to me, they're like putting together a puzzle. I like the fact almost every single heist movie is the same setup. This is everything that you're going to see along the hour and a half, 2 hour long movie you're about to sit down for means something. And you need to be paying attention to figure out what little things mean what. And I love that part of it.
Heist movies are the ultimate rat in a maze. You've got the cheese that they're trying to make you think how to get, and you're trying to figure out how to get that cheese. The more secure whatever it is you're trying to steal is, the more clever you have to be to get it. And I think that some of the movies that do really good heists, like the Ocean's 11 movies, and even the heist in Die Hard, those guys were geniuses to figure out how to get into those vaults that nobody should be able to get into. And it's that mental challenge that I think, at least that I enjoy watching in the movies.
You know, I'll be honest. When you watch Die Hard, I get mad at when McClane wins.
I'm like, that was a good plan.
That was a brilliant plan. And you just screwed it all up, jackass. Yep. Just shut up and eat your Christmas cake because it's a Christmas movie. Go relax and have some Christmas time. You don't need to ruin everybody's fun.
I'm apparently too greedy to be a good thief. I'll tell you my one childhood story since you guys had yours. When I was about 7 years old, my mom took me into a Kroger's grocery store. And it's Christmas time. There's a bell ringer outside, the guy in the Santa suit ringing the bell for mm-hmm. the Salvation Army. Inside the store, there was a gumball machine that had broken. And you could get unlimited gumballs out of it just by turning the knob. Remember those gumball machines where you put your quarter, mm-hmm. your dime in, you turn the knob, you got one gumball? one of those is broken, and as long as you turn the knob, they just pour it out like water. If I had just put one in my mouth, I'd have been good. I had so much gum in my mouth, I don't know how I was breathing. And of course, my mom notices this immediately and goes, "Where'd all that gum come from?" And I had to say, "Oh, I stole it." And she made me take all of my allowance, which was way beyond what that gum was worth, and put it in the kettle for Santa.
Hmm.
So apparently I don't have the self-control to be a good thief.
Obviously not. Man, sounds bad for your health, too. I don't tell the end of my story where I did take the penny racer back and put it back in the package. It's a true story. But I got it out of there, went to the park, played with it, then took it back.
There you go.
And I feel like Danny Ocean. Still do. Pretty proud of it. You might think I'm telling that story in shame. I'm pretty freaking proud of that penny racer.
I can tell.
Yeah. Glowing. All right. So do you ever... This is a legitimate point, okay? Because usually, and I know sometimes they paint them as bad people that they're stealing from, because that's the only way you can seem to justify it. But do you ever feel bad that audiences rarely root for the person who is actually getting robbed?
No.
No, because they do such a really good job of painting the person they're robbing as either A, some force that is just nebulous and nobody really pays attention to, or B, it's some sort of jackass, some sort of personality flaw that makes you really want to, you know, you're going to get your comeuppance by these Danny Ocean and the crew, you know, Hampson Rob and all them. They're going to really just, you're getting your comeuppance for what you're about with this whole high situation. So, you know, I never, ever feel bad for them. And I'm always surprised when somebody does tell me that they feel bad. And I wonder whether or not they think Hans Gruber is actually the hero of Die Hard.
Let me ask you a story before you go, Scott. Let me ask you a story, John, or ask you a question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ask me a story.
Don't be a John. In Ocean's 11, what did Andy Garcia do that deserved to have his casino robbed?
He was banging Julia Roberts.
George Clooney was locked up. She moved on. He didn't steal her. She came to him. It was a consensual relationship. So what did Andy Garcia do and I love that movie. I'm just playing devil's advocate again. What did Andy Garcia do that warranted his ass getting robbed of like $300 million?
Go
ahead.
I got the answer. So beyond the whole the idea that he was banging Julia Roberts is one part of it. But the other part of it was that an issue, but along the whole route of the movie, Andy Garcia is doing things to Danny Ocean to warrant the continued activity of Danny Ocean and crew. So I think it's a lot more nuanced than just, you know, he's just doing naughty things.
And I would throw in everything he does is because he thinks Danny Ocean is going to rob him, which he does. So he's not wrong in any way.
The movie does a great job of showing us throughout the beginning of the movie that Andy Garcia's character is a jackass.
But legal jackass. He's not a criminal. He's not doing crooked things.
He's a bad person, and that's how the movie justifies it.
But I'm saying, does that really justify it?
Yep, worked for me.
Jesus. Y'all both some shameful sons of bitches. He took my woman. I didn't know that women were property. Is that what you guys were saying, that women are property?
I didn't bring up the Julia Roberts thing. Don't look at me.
Is that what you're saying, John?
I'm going to go back to my what should have been my initial defense. Fictional characters. Fictional characters. There are fictional characters. Who gives a crap?
I will say that there was one victim of a heist that I did feel sorry for, and that's the Nakatomi Corporation in Die Hard. They didn't do anything to warrant that.
Yeah.
That did bother me a little bit.
But they're painting the villain. They're painting the thieves as bad guys,
right? Which is why
they actually are bad guys.
Yes, they were.
Right, but in Ocean's 11, they are the heroes, and we all love every one of them. We're like, yeah, that was great. That was great. Nobody's sitting there going, poor Andy Garcia. He's sitting there broke, lost his woman. I mean, just like nothing went well for this poor guy.
They did a great job of portraying him as an asshole. It worked for me.
Yeah. And he wasn't broke after that whole thing. Let's just face some facts. He was not. He was doing just fine.
His insurance premium shot through the roof.
But he got it all back through insurance. All that money was insured. He didn't lose anything.
That's a cop out, copper. It's a copper out.
Whatever. Look,
I could hang out with Danny Ocean and crew and have a couple of drinks and then send them on the very, very merry way to go rob something, because I'm not going to be a part of it, because I'm clearly going to run to Andy Garcia and be like, I'm so sorry. But I can't hang out with Hans Gruber and the scary German guys. It's just not going to happen.
All right. So I think this could actually be a little fun. And I guess I didn't answer the question. I sympathize almost every time with a person getting robbed. Unless they are a legitimate criminal, I typically sympathize with them. Because they're fictional, but okay, he's rude. He's rude to a waiter. I don't know if that necessarily warrants $300 million. I can't really justify it in my head. It's just fun to watch. All right, so what is the absolute worst heist you've ever seen attempted on film or TV, whether they went through it or not? The worst one, as in you could not buy any of what they did, or it bugged you so much, or you just couldn't stand the heistiness of the heist, Scott.
The one that I kept coming back to when I read this, National Treasure stealing the Declaration of Independence, was the most ridiculous goddamn thing I have ever seen in a movie. Those documents are protected like they're made of unobtainium. All right.
Is that a mineral?
That dude would have gotten riddled with bullets almost immediately into that scheme. If you took Danny Ocean's crew and
No, he planned, got the fake one from the gift shop. It all makes sense.
From the gift shop. Think about that for a minute.
No, I don't want
to. If you had Danny Ocean's crew and 8 months to plan, maybe you could get out of there in the middle of the night through a tunnel with the Declaration of Independence. Walking out after swapping it with a gift shop replica in the middle of the day, no.
And I sympathize with the victim, America.
That bugged the crap out of me when I saw that movie. That is by far the worst conceived heist I've ever seen put into a film.
Fun movie, though. I buy it.
It's a fun movie. It just that part sucks.
John's like, I totally get it. Our security is inept.
I totally get it. I can, a history professor and a computer nerd and a girl who doesn't know she's actually involved in the whole thing can, and a whole bunch of guys trying to shoot them in the process, like a bunch of mercenaries. Yeah, no, I buy it. I buy every bit of it.
All right. What about you, John? What's your worst heist?
The worst heist I could think of, and unfortunately we just watched this for Bad Movie Night, was the heist in 3,000 Miles of Graceland. Those guys didn't like each other. They didn't. They barely knew each other. They were just looking to kill each other at any given moment they possibly could. It just didn't make sense. Like a good heist, everyone is working together, and they are not. Like the only reason why that movie exists is just to see Kevin Costner in that outfit the whole time.
Hey, and Kurt Russell. Both of them.
And Kurt Russell.
Let me ask you both a question before I give you my worst one, okay? Do you agree that to be a good heist, you have to succeed?
No.
No.
You don't?
No.
Okay. Well, to me, you have to. That's the only way a heist makes is good to me. It's not a good heist if you don't get the loot, if you don't walk away, if you don't get away from the cops, whatever. That's not a good heist. That's really bad planning or really, really reactionary problems that you need to deal with mentally because it's not gonna work. So I want to preface this with, I love the actual movie. But in terms of an awful heist, Heat. Heat has one of the worst heists I've ever seen on a movie. In fact, to me, it is the worst heist because everybody raves about this being a great heist movie. It's not. It's a very good film about the worlds that separate criminals and cops. I think it's a great movie in that respect. But it's an awful heist flick because almost everybody in the heist dies. And the one guy that gets away loses his entire family. It's full of criminals making stupid cliche moves. The lead criminal, Robert De Niro, could easily have walked away. He almost gets away. And then he's like, well, no, I need no revenge. I need to go away. Even though I know this guy's house is probably being watched. But gets himself all killed. And just everything about the actual heist is so dumb. And everything they do is dumb. Every mistake that they make is a really bad movie mistake. It's not even a good reasoning mistake. Yes.
I don't think Heat is a heist movie.
What do you think it is?
Heat is a bank robbery movie. There's a difference between a strong arm bank robbery and a heist. A heist is something that you plan.
If you Google you 10 slow, top heist movies, Heat is always in those lists.
I don't think it should be included any more than Point Break should be included.
Hey, Point Break should be included too.
I don't buy
Whoa.
It.
Whoa.
They're bank robberies.
It should not be included in good FBI movies because he's the worst FBI agent in history, Johnny Utah is, but that's
Can surf. Sort of.
Yeah, but it's worst FBI agent in history.
Anyway, I don't consider Heat to really be a heist movie because I see a difference between a heist like what they do in Ocean's 11 and just walking into a bank with guns and robbing it. To me, that's
you have to do some planning. You have to be strategic. You have to get a crew. To me, that counts as a heist.
Yeah, there's that aspect of it. There is definitely like a crew aspect of it. There's still an organizing something up aspect of it. There's also the fact that she has a great ass.
What?
What the hell just happened?
I totally went Al Pacino and the whole scene.
Did you though? Are you sure you did?
This sounded more like you were having a seizure, but
we were actually concerned about your health, man. Are you still there? Maybe he didn't.
No,
did you die?
I think my left side of my face might be sliding off. I don't know.
All right. Well, for me, you just have to be able to get away with it. Okay. So what's the best heist you've ever witnessed, and why did that one in particular stick with you? John, you can go first.
My absolute favorite heist is the heist in Inside Man. Like I said before, everything about a good heist movie has to do with the puzzle pieces they're laying down, which they do that throughout this entire movie. They start you off making you think one thing about the ending, and you go through the movie and you discover it's something absolutely different. They did a really good job of setting you up as to why you should not be too thrilled with the people that are being robbed from, being a Nazi conspirator. Also, there's some government, like a city government conspiracy thing is going on. They make it so that you like both sides of the argument. So you like the people who are perpetrating the heist. You like the people who are trying to stop it, with Denzel Washington on one side and Clive Owen on the other. You like both sides of them moving back and forth. And it is, for whatever reason, a movie to me that every time it's on, I'll sit down and watch it no matter where it is. If I just want to enjoy a good heist movie, this is the one I tend to think of. And yeah, that to me is one of the best heists ever done.
That's a great pick.
Yeah. So my second favorite heist movie is... No, you're not going to react to that? Never mind.
Your second favorite heist
movie? I was trying to get a reaction from you or John. Because what I'm going to talk about is going to be everybody's favorite heist movie, I think. If you look at, I think the Facebook survey put this one like way up on top.
Don't spoil it. No, it's fine. You do what you want.
Ocean's 11. I mean, okay. it was just so well coordinated.
The remake. And you mean planned. The remake.
Yeah, the remake. The one with George Clooney. And it was brilliant to watch. And that had never been, other than the original Ocean's 11, that type of heist where they're planning it like that. It just, everything worked exactly the way they wanted it to, which never happens in real life. But it worked so beautifully, and they got exactly what they wanted. I thought it was great. That's my favorite heist movie. There are a couple that came really close, but that one is still top of the list.
Mine isn't a heist movie, but it comes from a movie where a heist happens. Mission Impossible. The heist inside Langley, where Ethan Hunt, he needs to steal the official CIA non-official cover list, the NCO, I think it was. So he infiltrates the CIA headquarters in Langley. It's a mix of high tech and stealth, which still to this day has me in pins and needles when he's doing it, because they have to construct schematics and they have to go through their planning, and then they have an entire plan on how to get in, and then he has to basically drop from the ceiling, absolute silence. Can't have anything, you know, nothing can hit the ground. They can't touch the ground. He basically has to hover there, get the information and get out. And he has to do it absolutely 100% stealth, absolute quiet. It's an entire scene that is brilliantly conceived and executed. And to this day, my favorite scene from many movies, not just the Mission Impossible movies. It's one of my favorite scenes of all time. But in terms of a heist, I haven't seen a heist done better. And also, even though I think it was Jean Reno makes a really bad mistake drops a knife,
yeah.
You know, and lands on the thing. Even though that dumb thing happened, they still got away. So to me, it counts as a successful heist because they made it out. But I love that. I still, to this day, have seen that movie probably 20 times. And when that scene comes on, I will not speak or acknowledge anyone in my presence until that scene is over.
That is one of the visually coolest scenes ever filmed for a movie. And to know that it was all practical effects, that they really put Tom Cruise in a harness and did that instead of trying to CGI it. I love that scene. You're right. That's actually a great choice.
Well, of course, he doesn't allow them to CGI him anyway. He's just breaking ankles. He's dropping out of – doing halo jumps. The guy's doing everything.
That scene is, you can always tell how wonderful that scene is because, or how impactful that scene is because ever since then, it's been repeated time and time again mm-hmm. in different, slightly different variations throughout the years. So, and that's been around for a little over 25 years as well.
Yeah, it's got to be, I think it was, 96.
Has it been that long?
6 or 98. I think it's over 20 years, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, 98 would be 20 years, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's somewhere on there. 96 or 98. I can't remember off the top of my head. And I don't really want to IMDb it right now.
I'm old.
You're having a crisis, man. This is the second time you're like, I'm old.
I
know.
That just makes me feel old because, again, I was in my 20s when that movie came out.
Hey, you know what? So was he. Yeah. So, hey. You know. Right. He was a spry little fella, and he's still making these because he's like, I know these still make money.
Yeah. Right up until they kill him.
Yeah. How about some honorable mentions? This is where anything else you didn't mention. I do want to say before we get into ours, I don't think you can really talk about heist movies without mentioning The Killing, which is Stanley Kubrick's film noir in which Sterling Hayden starred as Johnny Clay. He's just out of prison, and he's planning on robbing a racetrack for, I think, $2 million with his crew. It was a huge influence on Reservoir Dogs, And even though it came out in 1956, which is the year after Riffy, it's still seen by a lot of people as the granddaddy to heist flicks. And it's also one of the very few Kubrick films I enjoy. So I just wanted to throw that out there because I thought that was important to mention. The Killing. If you guys haven't seen that, I've great classic movie. Yeah.
It's great. On my list now. I'll have to check it out.
You should. It's good. All right, what about you guys? Johnny, what do you got? What do you got for honorable mention? Anything?
I got two, I think. So one of them is a more recent movie, one from last summer, Logan Lucky.
Mm.
Ocean 7-Eleven.
Yeah, Ocean 7-Eleven. Exactly. 7-Eleven. What I loved about this movie so much is the fact that you think you're going into – well, as the movie progresses, you think you're watching a movie about these hapless morons perpetuating a heist. And it starts looking like that through the majority of the movie until the very end when they show you something completely different. And it's kind of like a heist within a heist. And I love the way they executed it. I love the way it kind of plays out. And it really, really surprises you. And again, it's something where you can go back and you watch it and you are able to pick up all the different puzzle pieces that kind of point you in the direction of there's something deeper in this beyond what they're showing you. I like how they play that out a lot.
I just watched that for the first time yesterday to research for the show.
Seriously?
Yeah. I had a feeling it was going to come up. Vicky was like, you need to watch it. So I agree with everything that you just said. It almost topped Ocean's 11 for me. It was that good. I really enjoyed it.
Wow. It almost that good.
Because he's right. These rednecks who are robbing this racetrack, they're not book smart by any means, but man, do they have at least a couple of them, some real street smarts that really you don't expect until the very end of the movie.
Oh, and that's Soderbergh too, right? Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Okay.
So picture Ocean's 11 with a bunch of rednecks, and that's the movie. And it worked way better than I thought it was going to. I enjoyed that movie from beginning to end. I loved it.
That's one I keep meaning to watch and still have not watched.
Oh, you need to. Yeah. It's really good.
All right. John, you had two. You had another one you want to mention?
Another one that I really love a lot and I go back to as often as I possibly can is Sneakers. So you have Robert Redford, Sidney Poitier, Mary McDonald. How can you pass up the amount of charm this movie has? And it's really a heist movie that's designed on accident. I mean, you got people who are doing a security job and they're trying to show how security works, but then they get tricked into stealing something on accident. And then they only realize later what they actually have and they have to figure out a way to make it work. It is such a fun movie and it has such a great cast. And I do enjoy that one. I don't think it gets as much credit as it should anymore.
I agree. Yeah.
Whistler driving the van is the best scene in that entire movie.
The blind guy.
Yeah.
That's a great – Robert Redford is so great in that movie. And
he's so charismatic.
Dan Aykroyd is too.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd's a lot of fun in that one too.
Yep. Yeah.
He played Whistler. Well, like, he played the blind guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No,
that was David.
No, he played Mother.
He played Mother.
Yeah, you're right.
The conspiracy theorist, which is turns out that he was just playing himself for real.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Easy way to get in those shoes. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What about you, Scotch? You got anything?
I had three and now I have one.
Okay.
Because John just mentioned two of mine.
All right. What's the one?
The one that I, again, almost brought up because this is real high up in my list of not successful but awesome heist movies is Three Kings.
Oh, that's, man, that's seriously, yeah, clap, because no, I wasn't even thinking of that. That's a great heist movie.
I love that movie. It's kind of a modern Gulf War remake of Kelly's Heroes, mm-hmm, and I, yep, just love it. Anytime that movie's on, I'll watch it.
That's the movie where George Clooney punched David O. Russell in the face. Mm-hmm. True story. True story.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and Mark Wahlberg, I don't think he's a great actor, but he is great in that movie.
Yes, he is. His, yeah. Everybody is great in that movie. Even the Iraqis who are holding him prisoner for most, mm-hmm, of the movie, they do a great job with their performances. Everybody just shines in that movie. Love that movie.
I'm glad you mentioned that one, because now I'm going to have to watch it again. I got to mention the Dark Knight heist at the beginning. That's a fantastic heist. It's obviously a nod to Heat, except Joker wins. He gets it. So I think it's impressive. It's perfectly executed, and it's better than Heat because he succeeded. So that's always good. And also, I don't know if you guys knew this, but there's a nod to Heat in it because they have William Fichtner basically playing the same guy from Heat. The guy when he, yeah, comes into the center.
Yeah, I know who
he is. He's basically playing the same, yeah, character from Heat in the beginning.
Was he the bank manager in Heat?
In Heat, he was the, help me out, John. What was this character? He was the one that he went back to kill.
Okay.
Was it Wayne Grove? No. No, it wasn't Wayne Grove. He was the bookie or the guy that was going to give him the money or something like that. I can't remember exactly.
I love that actor. I got to meet him when I was in L.A. once.
Money launderer. Thank you. He's a money launderer. That's what he was.
I don't remember him being in Heat. And I've seen that movie, mm-hmm, a couple times.
Yeah, he gets killed and he's one of the problems with the whole heist. But here he basically plays the same character and it's kind of like a nod to Heat. I really dug that. And everybody keeps mentioning Ocean's 11, and I think Ocean's 11 is a better movie by far. The heist is very clever, but I thought how they did Ocean's 13 was even better in some respects, because the entire movie is one big heist. Like, Ocean's 11 is very, you have a lot of character stuff going on, you have drama, you have relationship stuff, you have the stuff with Julia Roberts, you have a lot of, like, about a third of the movie is drama and plot and characters coming together. Ocean's 13 is, from start to finish, a heist. It's them getting back together. It's them figuring out the heist. It's them almost half the movie, they're basically telling you what the plan is going to be. And then the other half is them actually doing the plan. I love the way that they did that movie. I don't think it gets nearly enough credit. And I freaking just love it. Because it's like, if I start that movie, I can't get out of my seat until it's over. Because I feel like I'm watching a heist in progress.
That is good. That's one where they steal. They have to, in addition to getting all the cash, they have to get the diamonds, right?
Yeah, it's the one with Al Pacino.
Yeah. They're stealing the hotel Al Pacino, yep. And Andy Garcia is actually helping front them,
yeah,
the money to get it done.
Because they're friends now.
Because that's how it works.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the other one I want to mention, Thomas Crown Affair with Steve McQueen. That's a great movie. The Pierce Brosnan one's pretty good too. So either way, you want modern or you want classic, knock yourself out. Great, great movies. Fast Five. Gotta mention Fast Five.
The one that brought the franchise back.
The one that made the franchise fun. I mean, really, really did. I like all of those movies except the second one. But Fast Five, what they did is they basically just, all right, we're going to make this team pull a heist, and it's going to be the most insane heist. They're going to drag actual vaults down a highway.
That was so cool.
The worst plan I've ever seen, but they succeeded. Mm-hmm. So... It's fantastic. I love that movie. That's a great heist too.
That one never occurred to me because I don't think of those as heist movies, even though a couple of them are.
Because I think almost all of them are heist movies.
They're so batshit crazy that it didn't filter in that those are actually heist movies. But I love all of them, but the second one. You're right.
Yeah. When they say bruh, bruh, hey bruh, that's like a line of dialogue. Every other line of dialogue is bruh.
Wait, I just want to make sure that we're very clear. You guys are okay with you guys are upset with Too Fast, Too Furious, but Tokyo Drift, you're okay with.
I mean, that's not a good movie, but I can't stand Too Fast, Too Furious. Does
that make sense? I just wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page.
Wait a minute. No, we're not on the same page. I thought Tokyo Drift was the second one.
No, that's the third one.
No.
Oh, screw that one then.
No. Well, I'm saying screw both of them, but I'm really saying screw the second one.
Tokyo Drift sucked.
You should go.
I actually like Tokyo Drift.
You should rewatch Too Fast, Too Furious.
All right. I'll have to watch the second
one. You should, bro. Just go check it out, bro. Yeah, bro.
Okay, bro.
It's probably better because of Paul Walker. I mean, Paul Walker was charming in it.
I just remember during the filming of Too Fast, Too Furious, I had trouble getting home one summer because they were filming the movie on the highway that I needed to drive on to get home from school.
Seriously?
Yeah, because they filmed it directly across the street. Like, so the stretch of highway near the end where they're trying to get to Miami or whatever, was quite literally like my parents' house was on the other side of a park from there.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Are you guys ready for some listener picks for what their top 10 heist movies? They picked heist movies, but it's basically heist in a movie. Here's what we got. Okay. Top 10. A couple of these are tied, so there might be 11. Sneakers and Die Hard with a Vengeance and Point Break are tied for 10th-ish. Okay. I don't know if Point Break is so much a good movie or a good heist as it is just fun to watch because it's so ridiculous.
And it's fun to watch. I just don't consider it a heist movie, but we already covered that.
Why not? They robbed. Oh, yeah, because of the bank robbery. Yeah. Well, I guess we know who not to call, John, when we get our crew together.
Yeah, right?
Not if you're planning a bank robbery. No. If you're planning a heist, I'm in.
I'm not smart enough for heist.
I shouldn't have said that out loud.
Next, we have Inside Man. So John's pick came up. Mm-hmm. Next, oh, Bunny, Ball, Hudson Hawk. Yes.
Oh, that's actually a good choice.
Yeah. I love how they do the timing for everything, where everything is a song. I absolutely love that.
My God, that movie is magic. It's magic. I saw it like 4 times in the theater, and I'm not making this up. Every single time, only person in the theater.
Really?
True story.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a floppo. All right. The next one, The Italian Job. I assume they mean the remake.
No.
You didn't like it?
That almost made my least favorite heist. To me, that was just too ridiculous.
The original is a great movie.
As ridiculous as all the stuff is in the Ocean's movies, the whole driving the Mini Coopers through the house and all that stuff, I was like, no. I didn't buy it.
So he can't be on our crew, and he hates fun. Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't like Mini Coopers is the problem, is what I'm hearing. And Mini Coopers are cute and fashionable.
I'm a big guy. You don't want to see me try and climb into one of those things, man.
You know what? That's why
I'm 6'2". I'll climb in one of those any day of the week.
Movies are fun because you can pretend.
Okay.
Pretend you can fit in a Mini Cooper.
I stand corrected.
Police Academy, that shit. Rip out the back seat.
Exactly. Hightower.
I'm glad we all got that reference. All right. Next is Heat, which, again, horrible heist. They don't win. Inception is the next one. Yeah, I like that a lot. It's an interesting way to look at it.
That is a heist.
Yeah, definitely a heist.
Yep.
The next one, Baby Driver. Not surprised they made the top three because that's a very recent one, but it's also – people love it.
I'm so ashamed to admit that I've never seen it. I know. I need to.
It's pretty cool.
It's a good one, but now it's kind of hard to watch for specific reasons.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot.
No, shut up. I still want to watch this movie, so don't ruin it for me.
Well, there's a little space in there that you might have a problem with.
All right.
I still like it. I've watched it since. I don't care. I still like the movie. All right. Number two, Die Hard, which I actually didn't think about till the listeners put it on here in the Facebook group.
That's definitely a heist.
Yeah, I know, but all I see it as is a John McClane movie. And, I just didn't think of it as a heist movie. And now, ever since I've seen the listeners put this up here, all I keep thinking about is poor Hans Gruber. If he just – he had the best plan ever, and if McClane would have just shut the hell up and enjoyed his Christmas night, then maybe, this could have been gone down as the most impressive heist of all time.
Mm-hmm. So this is the one where you feel bad for the person perpetrating the heist.
Only because it's so smart. It's so smart. Right? It's so smart. They get the 5 locks or 6, whatever the number was, and the last lock can't unlock until the power goes out, and they time it just right. And then you got the guys on the helicopter, and you got the Twinkie. It's just everything is so good.
The first time I saw that, I was in Karate Kid, that
Ralph Macchio is the Karate Kid, right? It's not the other guy.
That was an illegal kick.
He swept a leg.
It was an illegal kick.
Wow.
All right. And number one, no big surprise, Ocean's 11.
Woot.
No big surprise. All right. Great job. Great job, everybody. That's interesting. And if you want to see, there's a whole bunch of movies listed on that in the Facebook group from that post. So you can check it out and find a bunch of other movies to watch this weekend.
Somebody listed The Grinch Who Stole Christmas or How the Grinch Stole Christmas, which is great because that is a heist. He robs an entire town.
Yeah, he does. He does. Yeah, that's fair. All right. Well, recent film or TV recommendations as we close this bad boy out. Anything you want to mention? Scott, you're a guest. Anything you want to mention?
I'm sure I'm probably the last person in the group to have seen Deadpool 2, but holy crap, that was good.
You like it?
Oh, man, did I love that. I went and saw it Sunday. And I just just like the first one, I loved it from beginning to end. I thought the stinger was actually one of the best parts of the movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of cleverness going on at the end.
Yeah, there was. It was really, really good. So if you haven't seen Deadpool 2 yet, if you're like the three people under a rock who haven't gone to see that movie, go see it. It's awesome.
Good pick. Johnny?
So this is the time of year where I really work my Netflix subscription over, because all the shows that I didn't pick up on throughout the year because I don't have cable are dropping on Netflix. I caught the whole 13th season of Supernatural, and I don't know how that show is still on TV, but I'm so glad it still is. And they did. I got to see the Scooby-Doo episode, which as much as I have a smile on my face whenever I watch Supernatural, I was cackling at what they did with the Scooby-Doo crossover.
I really want to see that. I really do.
It is so much fun.
Is that on Netflix?
It is on Netflix.
Gonna watch that. I will watch that one. I promise you, because I love Scooby-Doo, man. I do. I have the whole set.
Yeah, for somebody who hasn't watched Supernatural, there's only really two episodes that I suggest anyone who watches if you don't want to make the commitment of watching that show, which one of them is the Scooby-Doo episode now, and the other one is from season 8, an episode called Bitten. Those are two wonderful bottle episodes that you don't need to know too much about the show to get a handle on, and they're pretty well done. Okay. But yeah, Arrow dropped, Flash dropped, everything's dropped. I'm all caught up. I'm just waiting for the rest of the stuff that from the year to drop so I can just stay glued to my couch.
We've been away for 2 weeks. You just watched like 65 episodes of the television?
Well, to be fair, I was about 13 to 14 episodes into Arrow and Flash before I stopped. And then I just picked up where I left off.
Okay, that's a little better, but it still feels a little sad. That's okay. That's cool.
Oh, well, you know. They make me happy.
I can't talk. I've been watching a lot of stuff. Because I couldn't decide if I wanted to be on Clayne Crawford's side or not, I've been watching Rectify, which turns out is a great show. Great show. What?
I think it's funny.
It's funny but sad, because now that I've seen a video of him yelling at children, I'm like, damn it.
You know, I'm still on his side for him doing the whole yelling at somebody about the kids.
Yep, me too.
You guys should go to Variety and check out this, because you can actually see the video. And the Lethal Weapon thing, which is where Clayne Crawford got fired for abusive behavior and everything else, they did an expose. They kind of find out that apparently Damon Wayans and him were both kind of divas in their own way. He's a temperamental actor. Damon Wayans was kind of a diva. But yeah, he also has health issues and diabetes, so that, you know, excuses some of it. But there's actually the video where he's screaming at kids, which is not good, but these guys apparently see it different. So find that article in Variety. Or you find the one where him and Damon Wayans are going back and forth, and he tells him at one point, how does it feel to know you're only in the game because of your brothers? And I lost it.
That made me laugh. Yeah.
I lost it. I'm like, he just won me back. He just screamed at kids that he just won me back.
I may forever be a Clayne Crawford fan just because of that statement.
It was so funny.
We had a
I'll put the link in the show notes too, so you can find it there.
If you go on the whole group on Facebook, we had a lengthy discussion about this, and I explained exactly why I'm on Clayne Crawford's side. Listening to him yell didn't.
It is a very intense scene, and
it is. And it once I saw the scene that he was filming, I was like, all right, I get it. How many times has this take been ruined? I get why he's yelling.
Right. I've done a little acting in school, and I understand like the way that at least even in art school, they taught us what the whole process is kind of like to do this. And if they're following anything like what they put us through, and maybe I just went to a crazy art school, but if they followed anything like what I was put through for that acting class to keep up with the kind of scene they're going through, I totally get hauling off and yelling at somebody about somebody ruining the work you're putting into, because these people are like put themselves in such an emotional state just to try to finish this scene. It's nuts.
I don't know. I don't think there's ever a good reason to yell at children that aren't yours. I'm okay with yelling at your own kids within reason.
I'm okay yelling at other people's kids within reason.
All right. But other stuff in defense,
he's only yelling at a PA or somebody.
At one point he actually says, shut the F up, and he's directly talking to the children.
The very first one,
he's really yelling at kids, man. He really is.
With that. I'm fine with that.
Just savage. All right. Well, anyway, his show Rectify. He's actually just a supporting player, but that is a really interesting show. It's actually about a guy who gets released from prison after 20 years on death row. He gets released because of some DNA evidence that might absolve him, but he still might be guilty. And it's him readjusting to his life. Only 30 episodes, but it is a really It's a great show, kind of a slow burn, but a great show. So I recommend people check it out. It's on Netflix. Also saw Upgrade again. I love that movie. I just love it. It's such an 80s nod. I mean, it really is. If you like sci-fi from the 80s, you're going to love it. Caught Book Club. I really enjoyed Book Club. I had such a fun time. And Jane Fonda and Candice Bergen and Mary Steenburgen and Diane Keaton are just, I just love to watch them just do everything they're doing, where they basically, they have a book club and they start reading 50 Shades of Grey and want to kind of reinvigorate their lives. It's actually really funny and sweet. And I had a great time with that one. And also Hunting Isis is a series that just landed on the History Channel. And we actually watched this with Scott and interviewed the producer and director, which is in the feed. So if you haven't heard that yet, it's a really cool interview. And the director is actually a war journalist. So it's really interesting to hear his perspective, because he doesn't care about fame at all. He just wants to bring the story to the people, and it's really interesting. That series is cool.
I'm going to second what Aaron just said. Watch Hunting Isis. It is, you're not going to, first of all, believe that this is actually going on until you see what they're shooting with on film and the people that they're talking to who are there. I'm a history nut, and I had no idea that this was, that there were private volunteers over there.
Yeah, civilian volunteers still fighting. Yeah.
Definitely check that out. It's an amazing documentary.
Yeah, that's great. You know what? Before we head out, we didn't even really talk about the point. As a former police officer, is it illegal for you to watch heist movies? Because, I mean...
No, because I sit there and go, yeah, that would have worked.
Does it bug you when you know something wouldn't, like absolutely would not work, but they play it off as if it did?
Yeah, and that was like my problem with stealing the Declaration of Independence. There's no way in hell that would have worked, because I know what kind of security they've got in that building, and that would not have worked. The Italian job wouldn't have worked the way they wanted it to. It just, when they drop the Mini Coopers down through the street, there go all your tires. I mean, I'm sorry, that's just not going to work.
They have special tires.
Right. And if they had discussed that, like they were going to use solid rubber tires for the cars, I'd have been fine with that. You drop a 2,000-pound car 15 feet onto four inflated tires, you're going to have four flats. Sorry. That's just the way physics works.
Feels like you're a naysayer.
So stuff like that does. Yeah, as a former law enforcement officer, I'll watch heist movies. And like with Ocean's 11, I was sitting there going, and I was a cop when I saw that. I was like, that's brilliant. That definitely would have worked. The only thing I had a problem with that was generally, the SWAT team doesn't have their masks on when they're walking to the scene. They put them on when they get there. That was the only problem I had with that. When they were walking out with the masks on, I'm like, nah, somebody would have said, why are you guys still all geared up? So stuff like that I notice, but for the most part, I'll sit there and go, good plan, guys. That would have worked.
All right, John, we can let them back in the crew.
I guess so.
All right.
At least you'll give us some ideas of what will work and what not work.
Yeah, I can steer you away from stupid little mistakes like those.
That's good, because that's all we would be full of.
I am on the crew.
I would get busted before I got through the door. Sir, you're going to need to come with me. Why? I haven't even tried yet.
Okay, now I will say that of the three of us, I'm the only one here who's probably had pursuit driver's training, so I'll be our getaway driver. How's that sound?
Can you, like, transporter that?
Yeah.
Can you really?
Yeah.
I want to do a heist now just to see that happen. I want to see some of that action. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Listener comments or email, if you have any, you can send it to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, or you can just pop over to Twitter @BuyPopcorn or our Facebook group, where the post is always at, and you can leave your comments there if you want as well. Remember to grab the Ho and the Go, the Apple or Android apps. Remember, our Apple app is going away at the end of, I think, June. We're just going to have the Android app, because not many people use the Apple one. They use Apple Podcasts anyway. Spotify, we're also on there, or subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts. Please do that if you have time. We're also on thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's where the post will go, or your podcast app of choice. Whatever you want to listen to us on, you can. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws. Me and my other podcast, Smirk, Remake This Movie Right, which is wrapping up its final season this year. This year. And Scott was actually, he guested on an episode that's coming up for Highlander.
It's awesome. Listen to it.
There you go. And John was just on one for V and Maximum Overdrive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you got to do Maximum Overdrive?
You
suck. I would have loved to have done that one. That's a really crappy movie that needs a remake.
We
bad.
Remade it right. We sure did.
Yeah. We also did, when we did the bad movie night, I think that's one of my favorite bad movie nights we've done.
Yeah.
That definitely deserves to be on a bad movie night.
Thanks for being here, Scott.
Hey, no problem. I love doing these. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming. Johnny, thanks for, I guess, showing up.
I mean, I guess I had something better to do, maybe. Not really.
You know, we could tell people how to steal podcasts, but they're already free. So I got nothing. I got nothing you can steal.
Not if you can
do Stitcher, steal them from Stitcher by doing constant, like using fake email addresses to do a Stitcher subscription.
Sure.
So now we're heisting podcasts.
I think everything we were just trying to do just backfired and went horribly wrong. So that's okay. All right. That's going to do it for this episode. You can stick around. There might be a few outtakes. I don't know. But thanks for listening anyway. And remember the next time Solo. We've had a lot of people ask us if we were going to do anything for Solo. We did. I mentioned it earlier, but in case you missed it, patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. The Solo spoiler cast is there. You can listen to it there. It's free for everybody right now. So check that out. All right. Remember, the next time you head to a theater to rob it, buy popcorn.
But don't steal it.
No, you pay for the popcorn, right, and then you rob the theater. Don't do that. That's wrong.
There we go.
Oh, there we go.
That's better.
I don't know how any of this shit works. I just do what Aaron tells me to do.
Well, that's what I basically do.
Oh, that's why.
And it's better than thinking for myself, honestly.
And the monkey flips a switch.
Johnny, what's up? Johnny Utah?
Not much, man. Not much. I'll have two.
Utah, give me two.
Actually, I just put in, sent over to you, Aaron, on Instant Messenger, the video from Saturday night.
Oh, is this you and Courtney sex tape? Yeah, it's like drones flying through neon
shit.
That
is kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Very well done.
It was a very, very, trying night. I'm still recovering from it.
Yeah, it looks super stressful, flying a drone.
Okay. I'm going to be leaning on the table, so factor that into your calculations here.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
I'm just making sure that it's centered. Hey!
That, what the hell are you doing? There's none of that during the podcast.
Watch out. He's going to honor Justin and break out some chips.
Ooh. I liked his Justin impression in the last episode. That was pretty good. Okay, are you guys ready? Impression? You don't remember doing that?
I don't know what I do.
It was in the outtakes. It was in the outtakes.
I wasn't?
Remember the last episode? You were there. All right. We haven't done this in a while, so don't get caught monologuing. It's supposed to be a discussion, so nobody takes control over everything.
Roger that.
And then, Roger.
I feel like that was aimed specifically at me.
I mean, it was subtle.
Not as much as you think it was.